you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And not just the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go papertarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Dablina Chakraborty.
And I'm Sarah Dowdy.
And this episode is about a character who almost needs really no introduction. He's one of our most requested topics and probably one of the most gruesome stories that ever gets requested.
It gets requested around Halloween a lot.
A lot. Well, yes, especially this Halloween because we did Belle Gunness, which is sort of a similar topic.
Parallel story.
Yep. So, of course, I'm talking about H.H. Holmes, whose crimes and murderous exploits were featured in Eric Larson's best-selling book, Devil in the White City, which is kind of a chronicle of what was going on in Chicago at the end of the 19th century, particularly as it pertained to the 1893 World's Columbian Exposition, also known as the Chicago World's Fair. The time of the World's Fair is often thought of as kind of the height of Holmes' criminal activity, which is why he fits into that story. And he's also often called America's first serial killer, although we now know from previous podcasts that others like Belle Gunness may have been close on his heels.
But I think what's really interesting about the Holmes story isn't that the bone-chilling, gruesome nature of his crimes. It's how he really pulled them off. I mean, that's what interests you too, I think, Dablina.
Absolutely. I mean, when you learn his story, you find yourself asking over and over again, how did he not get caught? Why did people fall for his schemes and fall into the traps that he set?
And why didn't more people report all of the suspicions they were feeling?
Exactly. So it's kind of similar to the Belle Gunness story in that way, because I think you sort of ask yourself those kind of questions whenever you have
it. How did it get so far?
Yes. And there are some ideas about why he was able to get so far, or literally get away with murder for so long. And we'll take a look at those as we tell the story of his crime spree and the sort of house of horrors that he built in Chicago in the late 1800s, which came to be known as Murder Castle.
But first, we're going to take a look at his early days and take a look a little bit about what the childhood of a serial killer is like. So Holmes was born Herman W. Mudgett, May 16th, 1861, in Gilmanton, which was a small farming village in New Hampshire. He had a brother and a sister, and his father, Levi, was a farmer and a postmaster. His mother was a very religious woman. And both parents were devout Methodists, but the father was especially strict, and he doled out harsh punishments punishments for even minor misbehavior in his children. Consequently, little Herman Mudgett was beaten quite a lot as a child. And according to a History Magazine article by Phil Jones, Mudgett's father would even use kerosene vapor on the children sometimes to make them be quiet when they were being too noisy.
As a child, Mudgett spent a lot of time on his own inventing things like a wind-powered device to scare birds off his family farm. A lot of sources also suggest that another early pastime of his was experimenting on animals both dead and alive, which of course basically amounted to torture, though Larson's book suggests that this might have just been speculation on the part of researchers. His only childhood friend was a kid named Tom who died in a fall when they were playing in an abandoned house. Obviously, this was considered an accident at the time, but after learning what you're about to in the rest of this podcast, it might seem more like Mudgett's first victim.
A little bit suspicious. Yeah. So Mudgett graduated from school at age 16 and initially went to work as a teacher in New Hampshire. And while he was teaching, he met a woman named Clara A. Loverling, who he just totally won over with his charm. And that's something important to consider for these podcasts, too. The sort of power he had over women is really a recurring theme throughout this story. They found him very good looking, of course. He had dark brown hair and blue eyes and a thick mustache, popular at the time. But his manner, too, was charming. He was affectionate. He had a way of making them feel like they were really the only women in the world. And so he'd get close to them and not just in a like charming them kind of way. He would actually touch them, and that wasn't exactly appropriate at the time. But instead of being offended by this behavior, a lot of women who he met seemed excited by it.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've all met someone like that, that person who just sort of really hangs on every word you say, maybe touches your arm when you're having a bad day and you're telling about it, and just kind of makes you feel like you're the only person in the world.
Or potentially creeps you out, depending on how far they take it.
Yeah, or I guess depending on how observant you are. But
and I can see him crossing that line with some people.
Apparently, he didn't cross the line too much. A lot of women were taken with him, and Mudgett and Clara married on July 4th, 1878, when Mudgett was about 18 years old, and they had one child together, a son. But it didn't take long for the romance here to die out. Mudgett started going away for long periods of time and then finally just left, even though the two were still legally married. Then Mudgett decided he wanted to study medicine, and so he went to college at age 19. He started out at the University of Vermont in Burlington, where, according to Jones' article, he paid tuition with Clara's inheritance. So we can see maybe a motive for marrying her in the first place here. But after about a year, he transferred to the University of Michigan Medical School in Ann Arbor, which was, according to Larson's book, known for its emphasis on dissection.
Picking a program that fit his strong suit. So Mudgett wasn't remembered as an especially stellar student, though, and this might have been because his mind was occupied by a lot of other things, one of which was making money. So according to an article in Biography by David Goldman, it was while he was at the University of Michigan that Mudgett took his first stab at insurance fraud. So he'd steal cadavers from the anatomy lab at school and then disfigure them so that they couldn't be recognized. Then he would take out insurance policies on the cadavers, setting them up as some kind of fictional family members, and of course, naming himself as the beneficiary. And then he'd stage these accidents in various locations to make it look like the cause of the accident caused the cadaver's death. And then he'd collect on the insurance policy and get the cash.
After leaving college, and there's actually some question, I think, about whether he actually graduated or not. Some sources say yes, others say that he was expelled when his cadaver stealing was discovered. But after he left, Mudgett traveled to various cities for the next 6 years, basically scamming people wherever he went, trying to make a buck however he could, even if it came down to skipping out on lodging bills without paying. I mean, he was really trying to get out of paying every last dollar if he could. In Philadelphia, when he was working there, a child died after taking medicine from a drugstore that he worked at, so he fled the city soon after.
So So by 1886, Mudgett had landed in Chicago, and once he was there, he started looking for a job in a suburb, a growing suburb, Englewood, which was south of Chicago. And since he had had that whole issue with the child dying from the medicine, he changed his name. He started going by the alias H.H. Holmes and went into a drugstore that was owned by an elderly woman named Mrs. Holton, asking if she needed anybody to help in her store. Basically, he told her his credentials, which seemed pretty impressive, and he used that same magnetic charm we talked about earlier that he'd used on young women when he was flirting with them. And Mrs. Holton ended up opening up to him, you know, telling him that her husband, who lived with her in the apartment upstairs, was very ill. He was dying. She really needed somebody like Holmes to come in and help her out with the store.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about comfort hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
So she ended up hiring him, and he eventually took over operation of the store pretty much completely. After Mr. Holton died, Holmes offered to buy the store and to allow Mrs. Holton to keep living in the apartment upstairs. He got the money to buy the place in a pretty shady way, though. He did it by mortgaging fixtures and merchandise from the store itself. He also agreed to make payments of $100 a month to Mrs. Holton to cover the balance. According to both Jones and Goldman's articles, though, Holmes eventually stopped making these payments, and Mrs. Holton filed a lawsuit against him. Before it could go very far, though, she just disappeared.
So loyal customers, you know, this lady has been an institution in this neighborhood for a while. Loyal customers started asking, where is Mrs. Holton? And Holmes just told them that she'd gone out to California visiting a relative. And then, lo and behold, she decided to stay in California, to move there. But he couldn't give them any kind of forwarding address. Meanwhile, though, Holmes was proving a bit of an institution himself. He built up a following. People, especially female customers, really liked this charming, young, single doctor who had taken over the drugstore and was running a pretty successful business.
So not long after buying the store, Holmes started a courtship with Murda Belknap, who he'd met before when he was living in Minneapolis for a little while. He drew her in with that charm that we keep mentioning and with the allure of the big city of Chicago. I mean, to a girl, I guess Minneapolis wasn't as hot a ticket as Chicago was at the time, so she was really attracted to the idea of living here in the big city
ready
with this
move.
Intriguing,
Mrs.
handsome
Holmes.
Man. And they got married on January 28th, 1887. And, of course, he didn't tell her that he was already married to somebody else under a different name, but apparently he did try at this time to petition for divorce. He filed a petition with the Supreme Court of Cook County, Illinois, claiming that his first wife had been unfaithful, so he was going to totally destroy her reputation in the process, but he never followed up on that petition, so it was eventually dismissed.
Meanwhile, Murda did come to Chicago and lived and worked in the store with Holmes, and at first everything was okay, it seemed, but she started to get jealous of the way the female customers flirted with Holmes. They would, for instance, often ask for him specifically, and eventually Murda became more possessive and also pregnant, and so Holmes asked her to manage the store's books, which got her out of the store and upstairs into the office all day.
And it's interesting, I've seen the way this described, it's not as though he was angry with her for being possessive. He just saw her as kind of an obstacle to what he was trying to do. Exactly. So she was unhappy being stuck up in this office and ended up going to live with her parents in Wilmette, Illinois, where she had her daughter with Holmes, Lucy. And Holmes would sometimes visit them and bring money for them and gifts to his daughter, and he'd even play with his daughter, Lucy, and seemed to dote on her while he was there. When he was there, he seemed like the perfect husband. That's how he acted. But his visits started to become few and far between.
So by this point, Holmes, a.k.a. Mudgett, had abandoned two families, and he was running this booming business, and that was clearly the foremost thing on his mind. So in the summer of 1888, thinking about expanding business even more, he bought a whole block of land across the street at the intersection of 63rd and Wallace in Inglewood, which was undeveloped at this point, and he started sketching out some ideas for a new building that he wanted to put there. It was going to be a mixed-use development. That's probably what people would call it now. But he had some strange ideas about how he was going to build it, to say the least.
He did, and we should mention why he was designing this place himself, why he was doing the sketching. He didn't want to work with an architect because then he would have to reveal all of the secrets of the structure and its intended purpose.
Which was very mixed use, if you think about it.
Indeed, and he needed to avoid this situation at all costs. So he designed the whole thing himself, and the plan was for the first floor to have retail shops and the second and third floor to have apartments, and that would include Holmes' own flat and his office, which would be in a corner of the second floor. And the apartments he was planning weren't exactly normal apartments either.
No, they weren't normal. In fact, they were really creepy and weird. He planned, for example, to have a secret wooden chute that would stretch from the second floor to the basement. That's unusual. Not like a laundry chute or a trash chute. just...
Yeah, and he planned to oil the chute, too.
Yeah, that's weird. He also wanted another room fitted with a large walk-in airtight vault that had asbestos-coated iron walls.
Some of the rooms were also designed to be windowless and to have gas jets installed, the controls to which were to be in Holmes' office. There were also plans for a hidden staircase or several hidden staircases and passageways, and the large basement that it had was intended to contain more hidden chambers and a sub-basement.
So Holmes really seemed to like planning this building. It was kind of a delight for him, but actually getting it built was a really big challenge because, like an architect, construction workers could just as easily become familiar with the scope of his project, you know, start realizing secret staircases, chutes, airtight vaults, all of that, putting it together and
gas
starting
jets.
To make some assumptions. So he wanted to keep all of these suspicious details as secret as possible. So he addressed this problem just as he had acted like his own architect. He acted as his own contractor and hired lots of different carpenters and other workmen to come in and build little parts of the structure just by putting ads in the paper for guys to come help him out. But when the workers would come to collect their pay after finishing whatever small project they were involved in, he'd act like he was displeased and tell them they had done a bad job, even if their work was fine, and fire them on the spot. Ironically, it fulfilled another demand of Holmes, which was penny pinching.
It did. It helped him save money, and he was able to continuously cycle through different workers so that no one person knew the layout of the entire thing. So one person would maybe install part of the gas jet or something and then be fired, and another person would maybe start the wooden chute, and, you know, a third person would finish it or something. I mean...
And I think this is the first part where it surprises me that word didn't get out. Not so much that this is a really strange construction project that's going on, but that don't go work for Dr. Holmes because he never pays his workers.
Yeah, it is surprising that word never got out. I guess that's the advantage of hiring individual random workers rather than going with a company or a group.
I suppose so. But also he supposedly would test certain workers and ask them to do these really deplorable things for extra cash.
Yes. In his book, Larson mentions a particular bricklayer named George Bowman, for example. Holmes apparently pointed out a man to Bowman once and asked him to drop a stone on the man's head for $50. He said the man was his brother-in-law and that they didn't get along, and that was sort of his reasoning for asking Bowman to do this.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Me.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this.
I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter. That's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered. Could just be
in
me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about comfort hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
So it's also possible, of course, I mean, we're not sure. It might have been that Holmes had an insurance policy on the brother-in-law, the supposed, you know, quote-unquote brother-in-law, but it might have just been a test, as we mentioned. But Bowman, ultimately, he didn't do it. And he left the job soon after, but he was really creeped out by the situation, but again, didn't go tell anyone about it.
There were a few guys, though, who passed these weird tests that Holmes would set up, and over time they became his accomplices. One was a man named Patrick Quinlan, who ultimately became the caretaker of the murder house. Another was Benjamin Peitzel, who was a carpenter who Holmes once posted bail for, and he becomes pretty important later in the story in the second episode.
So one disadvantage to working this way, to working, rotating through workers, I guess, and never working with the same crew for an extended period of time, was that it just was really slow. The whole building process was really slow. So Holmes' building took years to complete. It was finally done in about May of 1890, and Holmes sold his drugstore across the street. And he apparently told the new owner, the person who bought it, that he wouldn't have to worry much about competition in the area.
She'd probably assume to me, don't worry, I won't reopen my drugstore.
Yes, but of course, then he went across the street to his new building and immediately opened another drugstore. So I guess the joke was on the new guy. He also opened several other businesses on the building's first floor, including a restaurant and a barbershop.
But we're going to focus more on all of those apartments. So the second and the third floors of Holmes's building, they had about 70 rooms initially. But then, as talk of the 1893 World's Fair started to heat up, Holmes decided that he wanted to turn his building into kind of a hotel for the fair. And the fair at that point was set to be located conveniently right down the street from Holmes's building. So perfect location. Making this change, though, from apartments to a World's Fair hotel would not only allow him to get a better fire insurance policy, you know, Holmes always after the best insurance deal, but it would also attract more clients to his building. So in 1891, acting again as his own architect, he planned the necessary adjustments and employed his usual method of rotating through workers so no one person would really catch on to the overall plan, what he was doing.
But even though he was still managing to keep his labor costs low by constantly firing workers, he still needed some more cash to get his project completed. So he took advantage of visiting his second wife, Murda, who's still living in Wilmette with her parents, when her rich uncle, Jonathan Belknap, comes to visit. While Belknap is there, Holmes comes and he brings gifts for everyone, and he makes this big show of being a great husband, even though, of course, we know that he's an absentee husband. Belknap was initially suspicious of Holmes because he knew he and Murda had had a rocky relationship, but over the course of a few days, Holmes does manage to win him over a bit. So when Holmes later asked him to endorse a note for $2,500, which he claimed he'd used toward a new house for him and Murda, Belknap complied. I mean, he looks at this and he thinks, hey, maybe them living together in their own house will be a good thing for their marriage and
maybe
it will help
my niece.
Maybe
he's finally got his act together.
Yes.
Holmes wasn't planning on building a house, though, in case you didn't guess that. He went back to Englewood and forged Belknap's signature on a second note to put toward construction of his new hotel. And not long after that, he asked Uncle Belknap himself to come visit Englewood and see his building. And Belknap couldn't quite put his finger on why, but he was really wary about Holmes' offer for some reason. He didn't want to offend him or offend his niece, though, so he agreed to go ahead and visit the new place. Once he arrived, he got this full tour from Holmes of all the shops on the first floor and then the rooms upstairs. Belknap didn't really have a great impression of the whole thing. He thought it was gloomy and weird, which is a sense that we'll also get from others who visit this place later. Finally, though, Holmes invited Belknap to go on the roof of the building, and Belknap just, at this point, did not feel good about this offer at all.
Yeah, I mean, part of it is he just doesn't really like Holmes still, even though he wants to try for the sake of his niece, but he also thinks the situation is kind of strange.
Getting strange.
Yeah, getting stranger by the minute. So he makes an excuse saying that he's too old to take on that number of steps, and Holmes just keeps trying, though, and trying to convince him, bragging about the view up there and so forth, and telling him he can check out the construction better from there, but Belknap wouldn't budge. So then Holmes invited Belknap to spend the night. He didn't want to do this either. He finally agreed with him, though, just because he figured, I'm refusing so much, I'm really going to offend him at this point. So to keep things just sort of, you know,
cool,
amicable.
With the family.
Exactly. He decides, okay, I'll stay the night. So that night, after Holmes shows him to his room on the second floor, Belknap locks his door. He still has that sort of uneasy feeling. And after what happens later on, we find out that he'll be really glad that he did that.
Dun, dun, dun.
So that's it for part one of this podcast. But next time, of course, we're going to see what happens with Belknap's fate. But of course, we're going to check out some more details also on Holmes' reign of terror during the World's Fair, his eventual flight from Chicago, and we're going to discuss how he ultimately gets caught, which is an interesting story in itself.
And the fate of the Murder Castle, too. Don't forget that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Murder Castle is like a character in itself in this whole story. So we will absolutely find out what happens with that. Until then, though, you'll have to enjoy some listener mail. So we have an awesome postcard here from listener Lana, and she says, Sarah and Dublina, I adore your podcast, and it came in handy on my recent trip to Prague, where I came upon the grave of Tycho Brahe. Thanks to your expertise, I was able to provide my friends with tales of his drunk moose, as well as his metal nose. And in parentheses, she says, his relief has a line at the nose to mark the prosthetic. Keep up the great work. All the best.
So her postcard is a photo of his monument, and I think Dublina and I looked pretty close. We were trying to see the line, but I think it's something you must have to be there in person.
I can't. I've been staring at it a while, and now I feel like I can see it, but I think I might be just making it up in my head.
I don't know. Yeah, maybe we should look around the office for a magnifying glass and see if we can tell.
Check it out. Oh, I trust Lana.
So thank you, Lana. And that's another good fact for us to know about Tycho, that the nose is even on his tomb.
Indeed. And if you want to share any details of your own travels with us or send us some ideas for future podcasts, please write us. We're at historypodcast@howstuffworks.com, where you can also find us on Facebook or on Twitter at Mist in History.
And if you want to learn more about other kind of creepy houses, potentially cool houses, they don't all have to be murder castles, we do have an article on eccentric homes with hidden passageways. So be sure to check that out by searching for eccentric homes with hidden passageways on our homepage at www.howstuffworks.com.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join HowStuffWorks staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This is Raquel Willis from Queer Chronicles. Right now, there are close to 500 anti-LGBTQ plus bills in state legislatures across the country. Lambda Legal is leading the charge against these hateful bills that target mostly trans and non-binary people. You can fight discrimination and help write the next chapter of Lambda Legal history. To learn more about their open cases and to donate, visit lambdalegal.org. That's lambdalegal.org.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.